There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
So welcome aboard, everyone. NFL Live here with Dan Graziano, Josina Anderson, Victor Cruz. I'm Susie Kalber. So here's where we're going to start. Because, you know, if some of the biggest expectations are on the Browns, then so is the scrutiny. You got to be able to deal with it. So even though Baker Mayfield was casually hanging out and just talking football with GQ last May, his comments are news today. Mayfield said about the Giants drafting Daniel Jones, quote, blows my mind. Either you have a history of winning and being that guy for your team or you don't. Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you got to win. Well, Baker clarified his comments about Daniel Jones on Instagram, saying, this is not what I said. So just so we're clear, I also said I was surprised I got drafted number one and then was talking about the flaws in evaluating quarterbacks. Reporters and media will do anything to come up with a clickbait story. Heard nothing but good things and wish nothing but the best for Daniel. And now here's what Baker said today.
The interview was done back in April, like right after the draft, and just things taken out of context, and that's the problem with today's day and age. You know, you don't read the whole thing. You don't put two and two together. You just kind of read scripts, and then people, you know, they combine sentences from different conversations, and so it seemed very disrespectful, and I can understand that, but what people didn't realize is the conversation entailed of me saying that I was surprised I was drafted number one overall, too. It had nothing to do specifically about Daniel, about the winning and stuff, but you know, I reached out to Daniel because all that blew out of, you know, way out of hand, and I wanted him to know how I felt. And I've heard nothing but great things from Saquon and Sterling Shepard, guys that, you know, have a lot of respect for him and that I, you know, respect their opinions. And so I just wanted to clear the air with him. If you guys, if I had a problem with someone, I'm pretty sure I've made it very clear that I will say I have a problem with someone, which is, you know, why I addressed it.
All right, so let's be clear. Baker reached out to Jones by text. That's fine. And we know things can get misconstrued. You take bits and pieces of a story. Where do you think this stands right now? I mean, is this overdone?
I spent some time around the Browns last week and the week before, and talking to people in that organization, they are dying to get to the start of the regular season because this whole offseason has been about expectations and who's saying what and all this. So I think that's the way they're looking at it inside the building. Let's just get to some games and see how good we really are. But in terms of Baker, I feel like this is who he's going to be. I feel like this is, you know, he's going to be a guy who speaks his mind, who is honest and direct. And we're not used to that from our professional athletes. I think a lot of the stuff we get is, you know, is canned and prepackaged. So I actually kind of like it. But, it'll live forever. These kinds of things live forever. If Daniel Jones turns out to be a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield, then this will get brought up approximately 1 zillion times over the next 10, 12 years.
I think that it's going to make Baker Mayfield be, you know, a little bit more wary about who he talks to and being more cognizant of things that he says within a larger context in terms of how it can be sliced out for that portion to be created into a headline, particularly also when you're doing a print article and people are not having the opportunity to see your body language, your tone, or see more of what you're saying. I mean, this is why you have athletes like Odell Beckham saying he's starting his own YouTube channel because he wants more of what he's saying and more power over what's edited or not edited, what have you. And it's not to say he didn't say or what, you know, what it is. I think Baker's point is that he felt like he said other things that added color to the actual tone of the overall discussion, which is why he's frustrated. And you can see why he's frustrated if he said all those other things, which I'm going on his word that he felt like he said that, you know, gave it more perspective.
Right. And he's talked about, you know, one thing is about that speaks to his character. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to make sure that was clear today.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me is obviously when you do these articles, it's all about context, right? We just read them and we take from them what we take from them, but it's about context. And in that context, he had a bigger picture, which we didn't know on the initial time that we read the excerpt. Now, moving forward, I feel like the Browns camp in general should just move on. No, all the talk in the offseason has been about what this guy's doing, what that guy's doing, how the team comes together, Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield calling out, you know, a teammate for him not wanting to be there, whatever the case may be. It's time to just be quiet in Browns camp, and get ready for week one. I know they're ready for week one. I know the players are ready for week one. I think that's the biggest thing now is let's just stop all the talking. Let's stop all the foolishness and get to football.
And I think the other thing that has to be underlined here is the fact that these interviews happen in April or May. I know I just got a message from Odell saying that the thing he did with Sports Illustrated was back in April. And then how they can be featured way later to, you know, time out with things to make it feel even bigger. And I think that Baker Mayfield not only has to be wary just in terms of who he talks to and how things can be taken out of context, but also because this is, you know, kind of fitting into a little bit of a, not even a little bit, somewhat of a history that is associated with Baker. You just had the thing with Duke Johnson, the, you know, making the comments on his public trade demands. Now imagine if you go into the season with the Browns, you have a little bit of adversity. These things are going to be magnified even more. So he just has to be careful what he says and when he says it so that it doesn't add more fuel to what was originally said.
I do think it's a window into Baker, though, because this is a guy who carries with him the perceptions and perceived slights that he's had in his past. And I think what he's talking about in his Instagram explanation hints at this is how quarterbacks are evaluated and the things that were said about him before the draft. You know, too short, the college offense won't translate, et cetera, et cetera. So I think part of his point is, you know, they underrated me. You know, maybe they overrate a guy who has a losing record. I think he's talking more generally. But I think it has to do with the way he perceives the things that are said about him.
We don't know that because of the context. The context doesn't give us that. We can assume that. But because we read that little excerpt, we don't get that.
And that's why you read the whole
story. That's why we read the whole story. Exactly.
Which is a good story, actually.
Rarely happens, unfortunately. By the way, Pat Shurmur said, he's just one of the many who piled on, let them all pile on. Yep. Right? And Jones shouldn't respond to any of this stuff either.
I don't think you have to worry about that.
I think he'll let his play do the talking there. Also, more on this coming. We'll have a live report from Berea. So as we move on, the latest in the Antonio Brown helmet saga, John Gruden said that AB, wearing a certified helmet, participated in practice at the team's facility on Tuesday. Quoting Gruden, he's all in and ready to go. Brown left the team twice, most recently Sunday, in anger over the league denying his helmet.
Is that a joke or what? Yeah, he's all in. That's what he said.
Did he practice today?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I got to ask. That helmet on.
Yes, he did. Yep.
Is it a new helmet?
It's a certified helmet, Vic. So he's all in, ready to go. That's my understanding. And really happy to have him out here. He's a great player.
However, there is another grievance coming. Josie, and I'll let you handle that.
So here's the thing. What I'm understanding that's going to be made as an argument in this second grievance is Antonio Brown's side feels that they have documentation that he was specifically told that he can use a newer version of that model helmet, and that was going to be the solution to this grievance so long as he found that helmet. Now, it's going to be up to the arbitrator to decide how relevant that person is that told him that, because this came after the grievance, and then also if what he was told is binding to the initial decision. Secondly, if that doesn't work and he's not able to use this newer helmet that would then expire within this 10-year period, he's going to reaffirm the argument that he should be given this one-year grace period. Now, for a lot of people, that's confusing because you've heard that these athletes last year already were given this one-year grace period. So why is Antonio Brown asking for a one-year grace period? Here's what clears this up, because Antonio Brown is saying that his helmet was not on that list that was banned and it wasn't told amongst those athletes who had helmets that were banned. He was only recently told after the first arbitration that the helmet that he wants to use is now banned. So now he's saying the one-year clock should start for him. But here's also another layer to this. Supposedly, the NFL only tested a helmet from 2010 or 2011. It's one or the other. They're actually not sure. He also submitted two other helmets from 2010, 2014 that are being tested now. So the argument is, one, you didn't test the one that we gave you. And two, even if you test one that's of the same, it's not the exact same helmet anyways, and every helmet is different. So there's a lot of layers to what is, you know, going to be argued. The question is, how is this going to come out? And is the arbitrator, because it is the same arbitrator that was involved in the first one, going to find any of this compelling enough to have a new decision?
And Victor, before you weigh in, just to be clear too, his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, was on Golic and Wingo this morning, and he said that even if Brown loses his second grievance on Friday, that Brown will play with an approved helmet despite his desire to use the old one. Well, he's going to play.
That's good news. That's good news. That's what you want to hear out of your player, obviously. But I understand the helmet thing, right? I understand how you can become, you know, kind of one with your helmet or be a person that loves your helmet, be somewhat superstitious about your helmet because it's probably the helmet he's had for his entire career. So changing that is different. You run routes, you turn, you're positioning your body a certain way, your head's moving. The weight of that helmet changing can affect you a little bit, especially your psyche mentally while you're out there running. But it's not to say you can't get used to a new helmet. It's not to say that the helmets that they have for you that are in the green or in the yellow aren't proper helmets for you to use. I think the biggest thing he has to think about is that this is for his overall safety. This is something that they want him to be healthy, go out there and take those hits and get back up and keep on pushing and not have a helmet that's dated that may not have that same give because it's, you know, made 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, we met with the NFL yesterday and they did their presentation on helmets and helmet safety. And it's interesting if you sort of flip the semantics around and say it here, Antonio, this is a helmet that there's a huge percent chance you're going to get hurt in. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't think that's the one I want to put on my head.
Exactly.
They're showing 34 different helmets that you can use, right? This chart that Victor referred to where some helmets are labeled green, some yellow, some red. The red are prohibited. The yellow are okay. The greens are the ones they want you to wear. There are 27 of those and 7 yellows. So I find it interesting, the argument that, hey, my helmet wasn't in the red when this came out last year. And the reason is it was too old to even be tested. So right. And they won't certify helmets older than 10 years. But there were still 34 options. And if he was practicing with a certified helmet yesterday, that's great. But there aren't 34 practices between now and week one. So he hasn't given himself a sufficient amount of time to find one that works. I think it's good that he's looking at contingency plans. And what Drew Rosenhaus is saying is if he can't wear his helmet, we will find one. But he's behind in that process. And I think that's something to watch here in the next couple of weeks.
Susie, I think the question is Drew Rosenhaus making that comment earlier this morning because it's indicative of how well they think that their arguments will fall on the arbitrator the second time around.
And also, you know, in terms of just having time to get used to something, Drew had also said, maybe it's a slight exaggeration. Like, he's worn this helmet since he was in Pee Wee.
he just feels
it's really hard to get comfortable with something, right, as a receiver especially,
absolutely,
and turn and see the ball.
Absolutely.
After all,
and especially
that
at the speed that he's going at, to be able to stop on a dime, turn back, get your eyes around to that football, it's a different feeling with a different helmet and different weight on your shoulders.
And I want to be clear, I do feel like the arguments are valid. I just think that, again, I'm just making the distinction that he was told that after the arbitration, didn't come during the arbitration. So I think that the arbitrator is going to make a line on that,
right,
on that point.
Partially because everyone league-wide was told a year ago, these are the helmets you can wear now. And you know,
so if you excuse
everyone else
him,
has changed.
If you excuse
you had to change
him,
right,
the floodgates are open. Everybody's
going to
be like,
door,
well, I want,
right,
mine back.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So how do you control that?
I don't think he's going to win. But we'll see.
The one thing we can say about this whole thing, unpredictable. We'll wait and see what happens on Friday.
Absolutely.
Right, how about some really good stuff?
Okay.
The Cowboys have extended linebacker Jalen Smith's contract. Smith, who is set to be a restricted free agent after this season, received a 5-year, $64 million extension, $35-plus million guaranteed. The deal makes Smith the third highest paid inside linebacker in the league in guaranteed money.
He has never complained. He has never wavered, never missed a workout, and he's never quit, not one time. He is admired by his teammates. He is admired by people he competes against. His story is one that I would have done anything to be sure that it could be a Dallas Cowboy story.
So much of it has to do with the approach that he's taken, the kind of guy that he is, and he's really emerged as a hell of a football player, the kind of player we thought we were drafting. But it's been a long journey for him. So I think everybody's really emotional about it, excited for him, knowing where he's come from, and he's got a bright future. He's still a very young player. He's not played a lot of football at this level yet, and he's played well. And so we're awfully excited about what he can be in the future for us, both as a player and as a leader.
You know, Jerry sounded so choked up, and for good reason. Few people are as inspirational as him. And so happy to be saying hi to Ed Werger, who is with the Cowboys. Ed, so much focus on all the contract talk around Dak and Zeke. So how did they get this done now?
Well, Susie, the Cowboys indicated that Jalen Smith took the initiative and began the negotiations that ultimately concluded in a team-friendly contract in fewer than just 10 days. The agreement pays him a top-five salary at his position. Smith is part of the same 2016 draft class as holdout running back Ezekiel Elliott and quarterback Dak Prescott, both along with Amari Cooper, in negotiations with the team for extensions. All have been offered top-five salaries, according to the Cowboys. Jerry Jones was obviously speaking to the three unsigned players while announcing the Smith extension. He expressed an absolute commitment to working within the budgets that the team has created for the three players and vowed he will not allow the NFL marketplace to determine salaries for Cowboys players. His objective is one, to keep the best young roster in the NFL, in his mind, together. And after the press conference, Susie, Jones, who's owned the team for three decades, said it's the reason they, quote, need to do the best job they've ever done negotiating contracts. And I think yesterday was the first example we've seen of Jones's actions supporting his rhetoric.
Well, speaking of other players waiting for contracts, what's the latest on Amari Cooper's availability this preseason?
Well, talked to Jason Garrett after his press conference this morning about the expectations for Amari Cooper with this heel injury that's bothered him since August 6th. And he said that the plan is to hold him out the rest of this week with the expectation that he would return to practice early next week. And Susie, speaking with Cooper in the locker room yesterday, he said he had a similar injury his sophomore year at Alabama and his rookie year with the Raiders. So he knows how to play with it if necessary, but he said he's not worried at all about it, that it's improved every day, and that right now the pain level is about a 3 on a 1 to 10 scale.
All right. Bottom line, as long as everybody is there and available for week one. Thank you, Ed. Coming up, let's take a look at Mel Kiper Jr.'s big board for 2020. Coming in at number one, Alabama wide receiver Jerry Jeudy, who had 1,315 receiving yards last season to go along with his 14 receiving touchdowns. Ohio State defensive end Chase Young follows at number two. Young recorded 10.5 sacks last season, tied for the most in the Big Ten. At number three is LSU safety Grant Delpit. Last season, Delpit was the only player in FBS to snag 5 interceptions and record 5 sacks as well. The 2018 Heisman runner-up Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa sits at number four. Tua's 93 QBR was the second highest last season, only behind eventual Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray. And rounding out the top five is Iowa defensive end A.J. Epinesa, who's 10.5 sacks last season was the most by an Iowa Hawkeye since Adrian Claiborne in 2009. So now let's look at the rest of the top 10. Mel has 2 offensive tackles at 6 and 7. The second highest quarterback on the board is Oregon's Justin Herbert, who comes in at number 8. Well, Mel, I have to admit that some of these names are new to me. I am ready to be schooled, however, and it's never too early to look toward the future. Let's start with that number one player on your big board. What is so special about wide receiver Jerry Jeudy?
First of all, Susie, it's great to have a wide receiver at number one. We haven't had that in a while. I think the league needs that. They want the lights, like the scoreboard up, offensive production. And Judy's a polished Marvin Harrison-type receiver. He's not Julio Jones, former star of the Crimson Tide, not physically imposing, but more of a Marvin Harrison, a precise, highly skilled route runner, just understands the position, and I think is NFL-ready, even though he's going to come in as a true junior. He's one of 3 other receivers on that team that are going to be big-time NFL prospects as well. So a lot of weapons for Tua, led by Jerry Jeudy.
All right, so then the quarterbacks, and you have Tua as your top quarterback. How do you see his game translating into the NFL?
You know, so it's going to be interesting because he didn't finish strong last year. He had the injury, wasn't 100%, and struggled. I think when you look at Tua now, full season, arm strength should be better. Guys get stronger arms as they move forward, particularly once they get into the National Football League. He's got tons of weapons. We talk about Jerry Jeudy. How about Henry Ruggs III and Jalen Waddle, the great sophomore, Devontae Smith? He caught the touchdown pass from Tua to win the championship 2 years ago. He doesn't have Irv Smith Jr., good offensive line, Najee Harris back at running back. So everything's in place for Tua to have a big year. I just want to see a little bit better arm strength. Guarantee he'll be in the top 5 and maybe the number 1 pick overall, Suze.
Other notable quarterbacks in the top 25, Justin Herbert and Jake Fromm. What do you expect from them this season?
Herbert's got a chance to be the number one pick. I mean, he's 6'5", 6'6", 235 pounds. He was a three-sport athlete in high school. He's incredibly smart, really cerebral. Players really like him. Not an outgoing kid. He's not a guy that's going to show you a lot of that enthusiasm on game day, but he's a quiet confidence. Players love him, and he's got every skill set, everything you want, like a Josh Allen did coming out of Wyoming. That completion percentage will get back up to 65 if they don't drop as many passes as they did last year. Justin Herbert could challenge Tua to be the number one guy. And for Jake Fromm, Suze, he's a combination of Drew Brees and Andy Dalton, probably somewhere in between. Really precise. He throws with anticipation. Doesn't have the big arm. Doesn't have imposing size. That's why he's somewhere in between a Brees and a Dalton.
How many days to the NFL draft? Is it too soon to ask?
A little over 8 months, right, Suze? 8.5 months? What is it? Yeah.
I don't know, but it's always
it's
great to get a jump. And obviously, I mean, so much can change and play out over the next 8 months. Good to see you, Mel. Thanks.
Thanks, Suze.
Yesterday, the Cowboys extended linebacker Jalen Smith's contract, making him the third highest paid inside linebacker in the league in guaranteed money. And what an incredible story this man is. Few players deserve the new deal more. Smith, the Butkus Award winner and a projected top five NFL draft pick, while he was at Notre Dame, suffered a devastating knee injury in his last collegiate game that changed the course of his football life. Jack Collinsworth sat down with his former Notre Dame classmate to find out more about his journey.
Big Jalen, Mr. America.
What's going on, baby?
What's it been, man?
Going on, years?
Good. I tell you what, you got prettier, man. You're way better looking. I got this in shades going on.
Yeah,
I love it.
You know I got to keep it right.
Let's get some food, bro. So I want to take you to one play in particular from that Saints game. You're down around the goal line, probably about the 3-yard line.
Well, we were in a zone coverage, and, you know, anytime, you know, the back, and specifically Alvin Kamara, he flares to the flat, there's a great chance that Drew Brees is going to get him a ball. The biggest thing about our defense is we run to the ball. So I was able to show my elite speed on that play.
The Week 13 win over the Saints was a flag-planting moment for the Dallas Cowboys. For linebacker Jalen Smith, who was second on the team in tackles, it was an opportunity to show the world how far he had come.
Jalen Smith down.
And you hope it's nothing serious with Smith, not just for today, but there is a young man with a very bright future.
There are teams I've talked to that think he's the number one prospect in this class. Bottom line is he's very, very likely to be a top five pick.
I'm like, why now? It's inevitable. You're going to get hurt. You know, the injury is going to come. It's the last gladiator sport. But not for one moment did I believe that it was going to happen in my final collegiate game. You know, Fiesta Bowl at that.
On the first day of 2016, Jalen Smith tore his ACL and MCL.
You know, when you go through serious adversity and you have to decide whether you want to persevere or not, it's all about feeding positive things into your subconscious mind. So that was the biggest, not battle, but just challenge and something that I had to be consistent with, embracing the season that I was in.
Six days after the Fiesta Bowl injury, Smith had surgery on his left knee in Dallas.
And that's just the numbing medicine, okay?
Doctor said that nerves grow back a millimeter a day, so it forced me to be patient. The key was to just build a great foundation and prepare the knee, and we'll let the nerve take care of itself, you know, kind of go its own course.
The 2016 NFL Draft is now officially open.
When you're sitting there in the first round of the NFL draft, yes, watching one name after another,
oh, man,
pile, what's going through your head?
Oh, it's like, oh, man. Oh, seriously, bro, I'm better than him. I know I'm elite player. I know I'm one of the best in the draft. Just frustrated because I know my value. You know what I mean? But I couldn't prove it at that moment, you know, because of what I endured.
Huh? Hello.
With the 34th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Dallas Cowboys select Jalen Smith, linebacker, Notre Dame.
Smith missed the entire 2016 NFL season. But the work didn't stop there.
Embracing each day, each workout, each icing of the knee to reduce the swelling, each nerve test that I had to go through every 4 months.
And what would you tell yourself?
Man, I would tell myself, if I can win this day, he's got something for me in store. Jerry talked a lot about, you know, how Michael Irvin had an injury early in his career, came back from it. You know, Jason Garrett, they all talked about, you know, patience and building the foundation and keeping that grace, just kind of assuring me that they believe in me.
As Jalen Smith comes up with a stop, and he's a story in himself.
Almost 600 days since laying on the Fiesta Bowl grass, Smith returned to the field, a Dallas Cowboy.
I was able to experience a lot during camp, a lot of the different movements, you know, throughout OTAs, my explosiveness. Just things will happen naturally, and I'm like, okay, that's Jalen. That's that Jalen right there.
Back goes Bender, he hit sack fumble. Sack strip for Jalen Smith, his first pro sack.
My body is so much more reformed and mature, which, you know, is going to make me even more of an elite player than I was at Notre Dame. Now 2018 and being, you know, the man that I am again, just embracing it. Don't look forward. Don't look behind. Don't look to the new contract. Don't look to the playoffs. Just focus on the moment that you're in.
You're an inspiration,
yes,
bro.
Sir.
My God.
Yes, sir.
It's been a pleasure.
Hey, you forgot to tell people that you and I, film and television major, in class together.
Oh, yeah.
And you were absolutely not better than me. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Cut the tape.
Just an amazing outlook on life. So since that timeout, Smith hasn't missed a game. In 2018, he finished second on the Cowboys in tackles and shared the team lead in forced fumbles with two. He also scored his first NFL touchdown on a 69-yard fumble return against the Bucs in Week 16. And then there's Zeke Elliott, who has missed all of training camp and two preseason games in a contract dispute. After Zeke's agent pushed back on what Jerry Jones meant as a lighthearted joke, the whole Zeke who thing, Jones isn't joking anymore.
Zeke's agent expressed unhappiness with the Zeke who joke. Have you talked to them at all since then? Any response to that at all?
Look, I've earned the right with Zeke to joke. Period.
Right.
I've earned it.
So have you guys had any conversations since then at all?
No, no. Okay. But let me be real clear about it. I've earned that right to joke.
Wow. Yeah, I own the team. Man, how does the structure of Smith's contract impact Zeke, Dak, even Cooper?
Well, it's structured so as to not impact those negotiations. There's nothing in the Jalen Smith deal, regardless of any comments about pie, that will inhibit the Cowboys from doing a Dak Prescott deal and an Ezekiel Elliott deal and an Amari Cooper deal. The cap hits are pretty low. I mean, $2.6 million this year, which is a little bit more than he was going to be prior to this contract, but still under $8 million next year, under $10 million the year after that. Look, it's a great story and a great deal for the young man, especially considering the circumstances under which he entered the league, but it's a deal that, to be honest, probably got done because the Cowboys liked it. I mean, they have these other three guys to take care of, but if this was not a deal that worked for them structurally, I'm not sure that it would have been done with those three still on the table.
Yeah, structurally, it definitely makes sense for the Cowboys. And just speaking at him, speaking about Jalen as a player, he's one of the best linebackers in the game. Sideline to sideline, I don't think there's anybody faster getting to the football, attacking the quarterback, in coverage. I mean, this guy can do it all. So not only is it a Dallas Cowboy-friendly contract, but it's definitely a nod to them defensively getting one of the best linebackers in the game to re-sign with them and be happy. Now they got some other work to do with some other guys, but it's good to get Jalen locked up for the long term.
So a couple things I want to say about the Ezekiel Elliott situation. One, I think it's very interesting that you look at the left eyebrow of Jerry Jones when he said that comment, when he said, I've earned that right. Jerry Jones, a lot of times, is joking about a lot of things. He's very jovial. He's the biggest personality. He was not joking when he made that comment. That left eyebrow went up, and it went up for real. What is he saying? Because he feels like he has the equity he has showed Ezekiel Elliott the loyalty in order to make those comments from the standpoint of making you a first rounder in 2016, from the standpoint of sticking behind you when you had the 6-game suspension, from the standpoint of when there was headlines of you in Vegas sticking behind you then. So I've earned that right. But here comes another apropos question. Why is this now the tone? Why is there, you know, a representative behind Ezekiel Elliott making on-the-record comments who normally doesn't make on-the-record comments? So what I'm trying to get at is we have to think about why is this stuff happening when? So let's rewind the tape. What happened before that? Ezekiel Elliott came into town. No one's asking why did Ezekiel Elliott come into town? So did he have some other business to do? Maybe. Stephen Jones wasn't in Hawaii. Did he have some other business to do? Maybe. Did he have to go see his son, as someone tried to text me yesterday? Maybe. Or maybe, and I'm just going to put this in the form of a question so as not to be taken as a report. I think that's smart.
Yes.
Maybe that there was, you know, something that was supposed to happen when Ezekiel came into town that maybe didn't happen. Was it a meeting? Was it something informal? Was it informal? But something didn't happen because look at the tone of this. You know, it's one thing for things to be happening behind the scenes. Now this is happening in front of the scenes and nobody is asking why. So I'm trying to direct the conversation there to illuminate that I think that this has to do with a little bit more than what we're discussing.
What about as we approach week 3 of the preseason, there's more pressure on everybody now to get something done. How about that?
Oh, absolutely. And then also, we're looking at how the clock is ticking.
Yes.
So I think, you know, my understanding is that, you know, Ezekiel Elliott would have hoped that this would have been done by the third preseason game. So if it doesn't get done by the third preseason game, remember the fourth preseason game is Thursday, so it's earlier in the week. So then once that clock turns, now you're definitively in week 1. So what's going to happen if it doesn't happen by then? And even worse, here's another question that came up last night. If Dak gets done before Ezekiel Elliott, what tone is that going to put into the conversation? So this is countdown to who's going to blink first and mm-hmm. who's going to be bad about it for real.
Who's going to blink first is the real key part of this, right?
You heard it.
Because there's a date where Ezekiel Elliott will say, look, we got to get this done. Like, I can't hold out any longer. And there's a date where the Cowboys will say, look, we got to get this done. We can't be without him any longer. So whoever's date arrives first probably ends up blinking first, right? So not knowing what those dates are, you indicate that maybe Zeke was hoping to be back this week. I think it's important for people to realize that, you know, stuff gets done between now and the regular season. This time last year, Aaron Donald wasn't signed. Khalil Mack wasn't traded. You know, a lot of stuff can still happen in these next couple of weeks. And the Cowboys have been disciplined about the way they've handled their business. I mean, you could say, should Jerry not have made that joke? I personally found it fairly harmless, but it doesn't sound like Zeke and his people did. So it seems like they've been disciplined, and we'll see if it ever gets to the point where they feel like they don't have to be anymore. To this point, they're waiting for the player to come to them. You heard what Ed Werder said. Jalen Smith and his side initiated those negotiations. So once that starts happening with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper, that's when it'll get done. I'm curious to see what happens if it doesn't. If those guys never come to them, how long do they let it go before they initiate this?
I think real quick, just because Jerry Jones has earned the right to make a joke, it doesn't mean that Ezekiel Elliott doesn't have the right to feel a certain type of way about
sure.
it. You know what I mean? I think that's the line here. I think Jerry Jones has earned that right to make a joke, but it doesn't mean that Ezekiel isn't going to feel a way about it. This is a time in his life and his career where he can make enough money to take care of his family for the long term, and that isn't a joke to him.
Okay, so we just finished having a conversation about context at the top of the show with Baker mm-hmm. Mayfield in terms of making sure that you're including all the comments, right? Something else that was mentioned to me last night, and this is actually opposite of what was said on the record, was that there are people who realize that Jerry Jones made that Zeke comment, but also at the back end of that, yes, praised Pollard, but also said, we recognize that we need Zeke as well. So that was
also said.
So let's make sure we include that into the conversation.
Absolutely. He said, I'm sorry, go on.
No, absolutely. But then the last thing that was said to me last night was, you know, it's not just about, okay, let's watch to see when this gets done, if Dak gets done first, or what have you. But the other point that was made is, you know, how is Zeke going to handle this in terms of how long are you willing to take this? And that question pertains to Melvin Gordon. It pertains to Trent Williams. It pertains to Jadeveon Clowney. Who when the game checks start for real, who's really, really going to be trying to miss some checks to make a point? Because he said that this is where you can see, you know, people start to really get angry.
It's about seeing who's about it, Susan.
I didn't mean to bring in a little Master P in here.
I love it. I had to bring that one back up. I wasn't going to let you slide with that one.
What's going to happen next? Offense for Matt Nagy also. Most of his starters will not be playing. And this happening at Eagles camp. Did you see this yet?
Yeah.
World champion soccer star Carly Lloyd, diehard Eagles fan, showing off her legs. She kicked 40 yarders and then even hit a 55.
These aren't sneaking around the uprights either. I mean, these are right down the middle.
They are right. All right. So let's take a look soccer stars trying out. Tottenham forward Harry Kane spent the day at Giants facility with Landon Collins back in 2017.
Carly's was way better.
Yeah, he nailed some. How about David Beckham? He signed with the LA Galaxy and then joined California native Reggie Bush on the field for an Adidas commercial. He made kicking field goals look so easy. He was offered a tryout in 2013.
Young David right there.
Real Madrid's center back Sergio Ramos able to provide some halftime entertainment for an Eagles preseason game in 2012. He nailed a 53-yarder with ease.
Showing off.
The Eagles are trying to tell us something. All these
and the question is, and Lloyd said, of course, her kick is being scrutinized because she, you know, moved up to it. Of course, there's not a rush in her face or any of that. She sort of feels like the technique is similar. Mm. Maybe we'll, in a second, get to why it's not. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, is there more of a future for not just soccer players, because just about everybody who's a kicker in the NFL played soccer at some point in their life, high school or something. But, like, right out of the superstardom of soccer into the NFL, why doesn't it happen more?
I think there's a lot of reasons. One is that if you're a superstar in soccer, to go to being an NFL kicker, and this is no offense to NFL kickers, but, I mean, that's not a superstar role, right? I mean, if you're an international superstar in soccer and you're making that kind of money.
That salary's a lot different.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And I mean, we've seen it. After the World Cup in 94, Tony Meola got a tryout with the Jets, or was in their camp for a while. Pete Carroll was the coach at that point. You know, and he's talked since then about how the ball's different, how you have to hit a sweet spot on the NFL football as opposed to a soccer ball where you can hit either side and it can go. So it's a lot more different than I think people are inclined to think. But I think the biggest thing is you're not going to get Cristiano Ronaldo to come be the
no shot.
You know, the kicker for the Chicago Bears, and then when he misses two of them, they're going to fire him. That's not what he's... Exactly.
The part that I worry about is if you have a soccer guy in there, Sergio Ramos or whoever the case may be, and the play breaks down. You know, when you go fired, it's a low snap. What's the kicker going to do? If he gets the ball in his hands, he's going to have no clue what to do with that football in that circumstance.
Well,
because it's just
going to be walking up.
Obviously,
it'll
be a couple practices. But even with that, it's different when it's happening live, Jojo. Right. I promise you that. It's a different story. Aside from practicing or when it happens in the game.
Also, you have to have, let's say it's one of these soccer stars or it's a woman who's a great soccer player, then you have to have a punter who can also kick off, just considering like the major tackling situations, right, of all of that. But I checked in with Randy Brown, who is the longtime Ravens kicking coach. He's a special teams coach for them. Coaches Justin Tucker, he pointed out that the technique is very different. There's a lot of things different about
it. Yeah, she's way more interesting, so.
Girl power is heavy on the set.
By the way, she said if somebody wanted to give her a tryout, she's up for that.
It's only one day a week.
Famer Gil Grant to be available.
Maggie needs to at least take a look.
You got to practice, JoJo. It's not just one day a week.
Oh, so now you want to come back on me with that.
At least come on special teams day.
Lots more to do here on NFL Live. Ahead. This has created a buzz. Back in May, Baker Mayfield said to GQ magazine, in part, about the Giants drafting Daniel Jones, blows my mind. Either you have a history of winning and being that guy for your team, or you don't. Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you've got to win. So Baker clarified his comments about Daniel Jones on Instagram, saying, this is not what I said, just so we're clear. I also said, I was surprised I got drafted number one, and then was talking about the flaws in evaluating quarterbacks. Reporters and media will do anything to come up with a clickbait story. Heard nothing but good things and wish nothing but the best for Daniel. And here's what Baker said today.
The interview was done back in April, like right after the draft, and just things taken out of context, and that's the problem with today's day and age. You know, you don't read the whole thing, you don't put two and two together, you just kind of read scripts, and then people, you know, they combined sentences from different conversations, and so it seemed very disrespectful, and I can understand that. But what people didn't realize is the conversation entailed of me saying that I was surprised I was drafted number one overall too. It had nothing to do specifically about Daniel, about the winning and stuff, but you know, I reached out to Daniel because all that blew out of, you know, way out of hand, and I wanted him to know how I felt. And I've heard nothing but great things from Saquon and Sterling Shepard, guys that, you know, have a lot of respect for him and that I, you know, respect their opinions. And so I just wanted to clear the air with him. If you guys, if I had a problem with someone, I'm pretty sure I've made it very clear that I will say I have a problem with someone, which is, you know, why I addressed it.
And he made it clear that he texted Daniel Jones as well. Jake Trotter is with the Browns in Berea. Jake, how do you feel that Baker handled the GQ questions today?
Well, Susie, Baker seemed very frustrated by this whole ordeal, noting that the comments he made about quarterbacks winning in college came during a conversation about him, not about Daniel Jones. And as you just played, you know, Baker has a long history of making bold statements and having bold opinions about other coaches and players. And he said, if I've got a problem with somebody, I make it very clear. This situation was different, and that's why he reached out to Jones to, quote, clear the air. You know, Baker admitted that the way the comments were used in that GQ article, he could see why they would come off as disrespectful to Jones, but he said that was not his intent here.
Jake, on the field, what's Cleveland's plan for their preseason game against the Bucs on Friday?
Yeah, Baker told me that he would like to play at least a half to iron everything out, that final tune-up before the start of the regular season. You know, as for the rest of the team, Coach Freddie Kitchens said it was going to be determined on a player-by-player basis. That said, don't expect to see wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. out there on Friday. OBJ didn't practice today during a light warm-up session as he continues to deal with that nagging hip injury that he's had for most of training camp. Susie?
That's Jake Trotter, live with the Browns in Berea. Thanks, Jake. The Antonio Brown helmet saga has dominated the news cycle with the new twist each day. It has also dominated each edition of HBO's Hard Knocks. Here's what we heard last night.
How are you feeling, Peter?
Once it gets real hot, then they get a little burning, but for the most part, I feel good. It's just when it's really hot, they start to burn. I got to take my shoes off.
Why don't you go to a cryo chamber?
Yeah, cuz not again, never again. Thanks for supporting me, coach. My head, the feet, people after me.
Yeah, I've been there.
You've been the constant supporter, coach. Thank you.
I've been there. Yeah. If you got any problems, anything bothering you, if you have any problems, I got problems.
Yeah, we're all in this together.
You know what I'm saying? So I know you got a lot of people in your ear because you're like a corporation that's kind of gone global. Yeah. But at the end of the day, let's keep this simple.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Football comes first.
Absolutely.
Everything else. Way behind
it. Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Let's, because you handle all that seamlessly, beautiful.
Huh? Seamlessly, I like that word.
I was trying to come up with a multi-syllable.
That's a great word.
Seamlessly.
Yeah, three syllables.
I would look that up.
They don't have those at Dayton or Central Michigan.
Full episode of Hard Knocks replays tonight at 11:25 p.m. on HBO and hashtag Hard Knocks streaming on HBO. Victor, how do you think John Gruden has handled all of this publicly?
I think he's done a good job. I think he's shown that he's for his player, that he's backing his players up. And that's what you want as an athlete. That's what you want as a guy in the locker room, is that whatever your spite is, whatever your issue is, that your head coach is backing you 100% and you feel that comfort from your head coach, because he's the guy that is going to be answering those questions that you're going to go to when you have these issues. He's the guy that you're speaking with, and for him to have your back, it speaks volumes about their early relationship and how they're getting along individually and how this relationship is going to move on week to week.
What do you think, Josina?
I think he is handling it great publicly. I think it'll be interesting to see how long that lasts. I think it's also a good question to ask how authentic it is, specifically if any adversity continues in this situation and or other situations. I think it's an interesting question to kind of go back when that cryotherapy or burnt feet story came out with regards to Antonio Brown. If you remember, I think Chris Sims is the one that broke that story. I think, you know, maybe their side should kind of put two and two together and try to ask some questions as to how he thinks that story came out. So that's why I'm curious to kind of just see how things play out.
Really, it's 15 days till there's a real NFL game played, right? Like, that can't come soon enough. I mean, right? This is all so much. Like, what's going to determine the John Gruden-Antonio Brown relationship is how Antonio Brown plays for the Oakland Raiders and how much he plays, right? If he puts in a 16-game season and he's as productive as he was in Pittsburgh, that's going to really help John Gruden like him. And but if he's in and out due to various ailments and helmet issues and all that, then that's going to obviously put a significant strain on the relationship. And this is stating the obvious, but I think sometimes it needs to be stated because we're in the offseason and every story in the offseason that's not about football, and it's getting blown up into these headlines, not to sound like world-weary Baker Mayfield here and say this is the day and age we live in, but that's the case. So I think we have to see how much Antonio Brown practices in the next couple of weeks, how ready he is for week one, and then how he performs once the lights are on. This is a player whose career affords him the benefit of the doubt in terms of how he will perform in real games. So if we start to see a drop-off, then maybe there's an issue. But if not, I'm sure they'll be just fine.
They really do believe that even despite the current reps in training camp, that, I mean, he is such a smart football player and just so savvy at all of this. If he could just stick around and be there, they feel really confident week one he's going to be fine.
Well, we got to stress the importance of building that connection with Derek Carr because he hasn't been there for a significant amount of time, and this isn't a situation that he's familiar with like he was in Pittsburgh. There's a new quarterback that's facing some scrutiny in his own right about, you know, will Gruden keep him next year and in terms of his place on that team. So to build that camaraderie and to build that relationship early on in training camp is important, and he hasn't been there. So we'll see how that, you know, plays out as training camp goes on into the regular season.
And I'm also really curious about Antonio Brown's conditioning. Yes, he is a workout warrior. He typically is. I think we saw Thursday Night Football when he was warming up. He did in the drills. But I've covered Antonio Brown since he came into the league his rookie year, and I'm used to seeing him even more ripped than what I saw. That's just being someone who's being observing. So I'm just curious to see what his overall conditioning level is from first quarter to fourth quarter.
You can't simulate real football,
right?
Without real football.
Exactly.
And to Dan's point, it only matters when it really matters. AB's debut is going to be on the 50th season of Monday Night Football. That kicks off on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. And it's our annual doubleheader. Drew Brees and the Saints host Deshaun Watson and the Texans at 6:55 Eastern. And then we've got Oakland and the Broncos. As we celebrate, ESPN Fantasy Football is back, and with the season right around the corner, start your league now at ESPN.com/fantasyfootball. And as we celebrate 100 years of the NFL, our brand new series, Peyton's Places, is streaming exclusively on ESPN+. Legendary quarterback Peyton Manning travels the country to see the people and places that made the NFL the NFL. In Episode 6, Ray Lewis shares his conspiracy theory on the power outage at Super Bowl 47.
Why'd the clock stop? Why's the clock stop?
Ray, a lot of things have happened in 100 years, but yeah. Only once has there been a Super Bowl where the lights go out. There's a little bit of a flow.
You need to tell me straight up right now who made that call.
I don't know.
Man,
don't
you, know. Peyton, I, you connect.
Can I have another crab, please?
Yeah, see, now, yeah. Now you want another crab.
Now you want another crab. Quiet and the crowd noise down. I'm from New Orleans, so I take a lot of pride in our electricity, okay. And I was very disappointed.
In a billion-dollar stadium, lights ain't going out, Peyton, unless something is at risk.
So you're going conspiracy.
I'm going conspiracy. I don't know what happened. Zillion-dollar company? Ain't no way. For that game to be so lopsided.
Yeah, it was about to get ugly, right? It was about to get...
Come on, yeah. We're almost 3-4 touchdowns up.
Yeah.
It's about to get ugly. It's third down at 13,
yeah,
I think.
They're throwing. They're going to have to throw every play.
It's paying
it off.
It's,
yeah.
Man, it's 60-3. Guys, this is an executive decision. Hit the lights.
It's like Kevin Costner and Bull Durham. I can get us a rain out.
Love them together. Ray's conspiracy theory, just part of Episode 6. Peyton and Ray also discuss the importance of game wreckers. The first 6 episodes are now streaming exclusively on ESPN+. And today is National Senior Citizens Day, so why not honor the oldest 5 starting quarterbacks in the league? Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger. 2019 will be the first time in NFL history that five quarterbacks with more than 15 years of experience start in the same week. What could possibly be left for them to accomplish? Well, plenty more. All right, Dan, you go first here. How many more seasons for Tom Brady, and will he get the 23 touchdown passes he needs to break that all-time mark?
Oh, is he 42? He's 42,
42.
Right? Says he wants to play till he's 45. Mm-hmm. I'm not about to doubt him. I'm going to say he's got three more seasons remaining. I don't know why that
33?
No.
You never know.
Just hide it. Hide
and
it.
Then, so three. So that gets him to 45. And in three seasons, obviously he's going to get at least 23 passing yards over three seasons. He might get that this year alone. So, yeah, I would definitely say I'm liking Brady to do whatever Brady thinks he can do, because that's the way it's gone for him so far.
Not going to doubt him. Victor, how about Drew Brees? How long do you think he'll play? And do you think he'll ever get that MVP?
I do think so. With Drew Brees, obviously, it's all about the guys that are around him. I do think he gets solid three more years. That puts him, what, about 40 years old, something like that. Yeah. The weapons that are around him is going to keep him young. And do I think he gets his MVP? I think he does. I think he does because of those weapons, because of those guys that are around him, because of Alvin Kamara, because of, you know, that receiver that I can't think of his name. Dan, give me his name right now, please.
Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas. Those are the people that are going to keep Drew Brees ascending to the top of his career.
By the way, he's going to play week three. One of the few starting quarterbacks.
Exactly.
Josina, you have Eli. First off, how much longer do you think he plays? And then the big one, how long will he be the starting quarterback this season?
So I'm going to give Eli Manning two because I'm not sure that this season is going to end the way he would like it to, and probably would like another opportunity to finish out his career where he can get even more of a goodbye tour, whether it's with the Giants or not. So I'm going to give that two. How many more games as a Giants starting quarterback? I am going to give that a good seven.
Seven.
I'm going to give that a good seven because, you know, the NFC East is very cannibalistic. I can see that win-loss record not going the way that the team wants it to go. The Cowboys are stacked. You know, the Eagles are coming with Malik Jackson and Fletcher Cox in the middle to come right at him. So I could see where this they could want to go to Daniel Jones to kind of get a new spin on the season.
Even with that much improved offensive line?
Dan, you handle old man Rivers. How many more seasons, and will he get that Super Bowl?
Phillip Rivers, let's see. How many more seasons? He's 37. I think these guys are going to play till they're 40. I don't know. Victor's killing me. Victor's killing me over here. I'm going
to
say three more seasons.
I was trying to help you.
Three more seasons. Victor's messing with me. I also am glad Josina didn't say nine because we don't have a nine. So I was very worried for a second.
Right.
But three more seasons to get him to 40. I think he gets another contract after this year, probably before this year, an extension. Will he play in a Super Bowl? Right? How good is this team? How close is this team? But already falling apart with injuries. In the preseason. So I really like their team. I like their coach. I like Phillip Rivers. I'm going to err on the optimistic side. It's the season of hope. I'm going to say yes, Phillip Rivers gets into a Super Bowl.
So that means that they'll be in over the Chiefs.
It's all said and done.
Victor, Ben Roethlisberger, it's been a while since he won a Super Bowl. So how many more seasons, and when do you think he gets back there?
I think he is obviously one of the best quarterbacks to play, in my opinion, the most heralded. Obviously, his stature, the way he plays the game is really, really top-notch. I'm going to give Ben two more years. I think he can continue to play at a high level. Obviously, the weapons around him are always key, are always important to continuing that longevity of his career. And do I think, will he get a third Super Bowl win? I think he does. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers love being not talked about. I think Antonio Brown being gone, I think they're going to get back to that old school Pittsburgh Steelers style football, and they get back and they sneak back into that Super Bowl and potentially win another one.
About that?
How about that?
You got more?
I think that's it.
That's it.
The old guys.
The Browns and Ravens have a couple things to say about
it. By the way, I'm not old.
Adversity
Let's wrap this up with some notable performances from quarterbacks 37 or older who aren't active anymore. So let's start with the final game of 2009. Brett Favre completed 81% of his passes, threw for four touchdowns in a massive drumming of the Giants. Favre was named to his final Pro Bowl that season. Throwing it all the way back to 1998, Warren Moon at 41 started the Seahawks season opener, threw three touchdowns against the Eagles. That was the only time Moon threw for at least three touchdowns that season. The Seahawks beat the Eagles 38-0. In Dan Marino's final season, he opened up on Monday Night Football against the Broncos. didn't disappoint. He threw for 215 yards, two touchdowns, and a 38-21 win over the Broncos. The Dolphins finished the season 9-7, making it to the divisional round. And finally, at age 37, Peyton had one of the best games by a quarterback in NFL history. He threw seven touchdowns, no interceptions, in the 2013 season opener against the Ravens. He finished that season with 55.
What?
ESPN.com right now, from the heart and mind of senior writer Jeff Legwald, it's an all-star team 100 years in the making. Jeff's research includes surveying more than 250 people through those years, including players, coaches, scouts, general managers, Hall of Famers, Hall of Fame voters. So here's the offense led by Tom Brady, and he would have Jim Brown and Walter Payton in the backfield. And then you see the defense stacked with Reggie White, Deacon Jones as the defensive ends, Dick Butkus in the middle, Deion Sanders, Rod Woodson as cornerbacks. Can you imagine trying to score against that defense?
Pretty good.
Yeah, well, pretty impossible.
All right, so Victor and Dan. Yeah. Obviously, we know Jeff's pretty comprehensive in all of this. Who's missing for you?
For me, it's Barry Sanders. I have two favorite players of all time. One is Lawrence Taylor, who's up there. The other is Barry Sanders. I'm not sure which guy I'd put him in over. I guess probably Walter Payton, as tough as that is. One of only seven running backs ever to average 5 yards a carry. Only 1,500 yards behind Payton, and he played three fewer years. And just, I mean, no one ever ran like Barry Sanders. I mean, just the highlights that are playing right now. Any highlight they ever show of Barry Sanders, he's never been tackled.
They look like that. They look like that, of him running
crazy
all alone. For me, I got to go Randy Moss. A guy that you, when he lined up, you knew he was going straight. You knew he was going directly to the end zone, and you knew the ball was going to be in the air, and there was nothing you could do about it. He was either going up and getting it over your head or outrunning you and putting it right in the breadbasket. Randy Moss changed the position of the wide receiver and how you cover that position. No disrespect to Don Hutson. I probably need some sort of encyclopedia to figure out who he is because it was before my time, but Randy Moss is the guy for me.
Yeah, I would say any player who changes the way, affects the game in a way that other players have to play differently to stop them would deserve to be on this list.
Similar to Lawrence Taylor, who pretty much revolutionized the outside linebacker position.
Anyway, it's really fun. Take a look. I'm sure you and your friends make some changes. Our crew here at NFL Live behind the scenes, they had lots of changes they wanted to make. It's a fun exercise. All right. If you cannot get enough football in any way, shape, or form, there is always, yes, the XFL is coming back next February. We're going to have a sneak peek at the team names when we come back. New season of ABC's Dancing with the Stars. The cast was revealed this morning on GMA. And look who's going to be dancing. Oh, Hall of Fame linebacker Ray Lewis.
Oh, I can't wait to
see the iconic squirrel dance, by the way, on GMA this morning. His daughter said, "Dad, please don't embarrass me." Big news. The XFL is back and will air on ESPN. So stay tuned. Slated to launch February 2020. Official XFL team names were announced today. So here we go. Those are the names. And we also have the logo reveal as well. Check it out. Yes. So if you had to pick a favorite, Victor, what are you thinking here?
Well, naturally, I'm going to go with the I love the New York Guardians. That's a good one. That's strong. The St. Louis Battlehawks, though, that's a solid name right there.
Battlehawks.
Battlehawks.
Pretty intense. Yosina?
I mean, I like the Houston Roughnecks, you know, Rough Riders is, you know, kind of my flow. So I'm going with Houston H-Town with that one there.
Who would win in a fight between a real dragon and a real battle hawk? That's what I want to know. These are the key questions that we have to answer.
Absolutely.
I think dragons has to be. Dragons, they breathe fire. I mean, I think you got to put the dragons.
And vipers.
And nobody gave love to the vipers.
Yeah, I'm not really feeling that logo.
You're not feeling that?
Not a big snake.
I'll take it.
Not a big snake
viper guy.
You're not a viper. Because you really know what a viper
is, right?
I'm
a viper guy.
Bottom line, it's more football.
That's true.
We will never be without football after the Super Bowl. Tune in. Right, never enough football. That's why we are here every day on NFL Live.
Tell them what a viper is.
Peace.